There's a job opening up for a reporter/editor at the Washington Monthly magazine. The ad reads like this. Desirable qualifications include practical experience working in or writing about politics and government. More important are intelligence, humor, and the willingness to work long hours for low pay. Over the past 20 years since the Washington Monthly was founded, many young reporters have taken up the call. They've come to the small magazine to learn about covering Washington politics from its founder and editor-in-chief Charles Peters. Some of those journalists have gone on to work for more popular magazines like Time, Newsweek, The Atlantic, and The New Republic. Before he began his journalistic career, Peters worked in the federal government under Kennedy and Johnson. In his new autobiography, Tilting at Windmills, Peters says that when he founded the Washington Monthly, he had a few goals in mind. He wanted the magazine to look at Washington the way an anthropologist looks at a South Sea island, and he wanted to show young reporters how to do it.
At that time, reporters were largely stenographers. They took press releases, they talked to top officials, interviewed top officials, but they did very little real investigation of the underlying story, the story behind what the public officials said or behind whatever event transpired. So that we thought there was a need for people who went out and found out what was really going on behind the scenes, and that's what we tried to do.
Now, your alternative, your magazine, was modeled on a project that you headed for the Peace Corps. You were the head of an evaluation project that was supposed to, you know, be an outside view of what was really happening in the Peace Corps, how well it was doing its job.
That's right. And what we found was that we were discovering things that the ordinary press did not discover. They would go talk to the head of the agency, Sergeant Shriver, or they would talk to the public information office of the Peace Corps. We found that by going out, talking to people at the working level of any kind of government program, we first learned this with the Peace Corps, but it became our key to covering the rest of the government with the Washington Monthly, and that was to go out and talk to people at the working level. You remember Woodward and Bernstein discovered this when they were doing their Watergate expose. What they found was that, you remember that movie, they were out in the night talking to the slowly secretaries, to people, the assistant treasurer of the committee to reelect, not to big shots, but to people who were down in the middle or the lower levels of the organization, who knew what was going on but did not have the loyalty to the that the people at the top felt the need to defend whatever the administration was doing that the people at the top always feel. A wonderful lesson we learned at the Peace Corps that I think is so important is that the Peace Corps volunteers were in for just 2 years. They had no career stake in the organization, so they were willing to be much more candid about what was wrong than the average career employee who has a stake, a permanent stake. So I say one way I'd like to see government reform is have more people who are in for short term and don't get that self-protective instinct or interest that most bureaucrats have.
When a new reporter joins your staff, do you give them a pep talk?
Oh, yes, they are subjected to repeated what has come to be called the rain dance. And that is given as I try to pump into them all the experience I've had in the various roles I've played in life and try to get that, because usually the people who come to the Washington Monthly are young, they're extremely bright, and what I try to do is meld their talent and their brilliance with my experience, and that comes through this device we've come to know as the rain dance.
Can you do an excerpt of your rain dance for us? Give us a sense of what you tell your reporters.
I don't think the airwaves are meant not only for some of the language, but for the degree of volume that gets in my voice. And also, there is a tendency, I think this is where the word rain dance came from, is to jump up and down as I get excited making my points.
Okay. Now, your salary at Washington Monthly is $24,000.
That's right.
When was the last time you gave yourself a raise?
Well, I started at 24,000, and then in the midst of one of these economic crises that we had frequently in the early days of the magazine, I lowered it, I think, in 1969 or 70 to 20,000. And then about 2 years ago, there was a moment where things looked awfully good, so I raised it back up to 24,000.
Do you have another source of income to supplement that?
Well, no. The magazine is my work.
Any family money, inheritance, things like that, that you could fall back on?
Oh, well, yeah. Well, I think everybody in the middle class, I think one of the things that we all know is that from time to time, you do get gifts. I got $12,000 when my father died, for instance. But the main thing that's helped me is that my wife went to work in 1976 at a local school, a private school, and that's brought another income into the family that has been the main help for us.
If you're the founder of the magazine and you're making $24,000, it's probably safe to assume that most of your writers make less than that. Mm. When you as the editor see a couple of your editors pulling an all-nighter to get the magazine to bed, knowing what you're paying them, when you watch them working that hard that late, do you ever feel guilty?
I used to feel intensely guilty. I have felt less guilty as some of them have gone on to earn four or five times what I'm earning.
So you keep telling yourself, this will pay off in the long run.
life may be tough for them now, but it's going to get nicer in the future.
You're considered one of the fathers of neoliberalism, and you write that life made you question conventional liberal prejudices, and I'd like for you to explain that.
Well, you found out through the experience of the 70s, it was dramatic that labor unions were repeatedly asking for wage increases without productivity increases. Well, this was one of the things that was making us uncompetitive abroad. I had before that tended to be very almost automatically pro-union, but here was this example of labor unions not being good for us. And so, as neoliberals, what you do is you're willing to criticize your old friends. You're not going to. It doesn't mean we're going to desert our old friends, but when they're wrong, we're going to say they're wrong.
Do you take credit for coining the word neoliberal?
Well, I guess I have been given the credit. It happened one night in our, that was the night of our 10th anniversary party, and there'd been a story in the Washington Post that morning that had called us neoconservative. And while I thought we were like the neoconservatives in that we questioned some things that were wrong with liberalism, still, we in our hearts were basically liberal. We still believed in helping the down and out. We still believed in freedom and justice for all, not just for the upper class. So in that way, we were very different from the conservatives, and that's why I got up and said, we're not neoconservative, we're neoliberal.
You close your autobiography with this advice, do work you believe in. And I was wondering if you feel really lucky to have found work that you believe in. I think there are several things that hold people back from doing work that they believe in. One is that some people can't afford it because of the financial need to get more money to support their family. But another thing is that a lot of people go through life without finding work that they really believe in. Do you feel lucky that you found it and that you could do it?
I feel lucky, but I also feel that a lot more people could be doing work they believe in, work they enjoy, work that makes them proud of what they're doing, than are doing it today, because too many people are making the choice in terms of thinking they have to make a lot of money. The absurd thing of thinking you have to make a lot of money so you can send your child to Harvard. Worst of all, thinking you have to make a lot of money so you can have that second home in the Hamptons. People who sell out for money when they could be doing things that would pay adequately, that would give them a decent, comfortable life, but that they would also enjoy and be proud of. And I think that's the choice you should make, is the choice in favor of work that you're proud of, that you can have your children be proud of you as the kind of person you are and the kind of moral guide you have been in their lives, instead of feeling you have to send them to Harvard.
Thank you so much for talking with us.
It's been a pleasure.
Charles Peters is the founder and editor-in-chief of The Washington Monthly. His autobiography, Tilting at Windmills, is published by Addison Wesley. This is Fresh Air.